Thank you everybody for coming. So I'm going to talk about how fertilizer additions change the soil biology of biofuel switchgrass. And I did this work with my advisor, John Dighton. So switchgrass has been bred for biofuel production or potential biofuel production for about 30 years since the 1980s. So there's been a lot of work on this plant that we're building upon into developing varieties of switchgrass for different areas of the country and for matching the water needs of specific areas and the soil type. In this talk, I'm working with Cave and Rock switchgrass, which is the variety of one of the top varieties recommended for the Northeast United States. And I'm doing all of this work in New Jersey, so right in the Northeast. So the idea with biofuels is that it can reduce the greenhouse gas emissions because when you burn the fuel, it releases carbon that the plant absorbed while it was growing. But converting the biomass into biofuel is a long and complex process. So in order to get a net energy gain and to get a very limited greenhouse gas emission, you have to reduce both of the energy use and the greenhouse gas emissions at all stages of the process. And where that starts is at the farm level. You have to reduce as much anything connected to energy use or greenhouse gas emissions at the farm level. So while switchgrass is great for a variety of reasons, just because it's a perennial crop, so you only have the use of tillage at the beginning of the process. You usually don't need very much herbicide. Once the plot is established, the grass is pretty dominant. Like I mentioned, a lot of work has been done to breed different varieties, so irrigation requirements are minimum. So that leaves fertilizer. Switchgrass really only responds to nitrogen fertilizer, so compared to a lot of other crops, especially corn, which is a biofuel crop, it requires very low levels of fertilization. And one of the reasons for this is that it has mycorrhizal associations that probably help the plant acquire nutrients. However, studies have found that arbuscular mycorrhizal diversity decreases in response to a nitrogen deposition gradient. So that led to the questions of my project. So these fields might be used for 20 to 30 years to get biomass to yield the biomass. So does a consistent addition of nitrogen fertilizer every year, does that change the mycorrhizal colonization of switchgrass? If that mycorrhizal colonization rate changes, does that also change some of the other edaphic conditions, especially the soil arthropod diversity? So finally, we hypothesize that studying the soil ecology of biofuel switchgrass will tell us about the sustainability of the crop. Just to briefly go over the factors that I'm looking at, we're looking at arbuscular mycorrhizae. So you have three different structures, coils on the bottom, arbuscules on the top, and spores. So arbuscules and coils indicate that the mycorrhizae is interacting with the plant and exchanging nutrients, and spores show that it's reproducing. We're looking at columbella, which are primarily fungal feeding, but also detritivores, or abatted mites, which are primarily detritivores, mesostigmatic mites, which are typically predatory in this system, and nematodes briefly, but they're a little bit harder than some of the other things. So if nitrogen fertilizer is changing the soil community over time, what do we expect to see? We expect to see less mycorrhizal reproduction, maybe less of the structures that indicate that the mycorrhizae is interacting with the plant. We expect to see maybe a reduced community complexity in the fertilized areas, and possibly different dominant groups of mites and columbella in the fertilized versus unfertilized areas. So we might be seeing a trophic cascade. So maybe only one level will be different, but that still might indicate a change over time. There's three experiments I'm going to touch on briefly. So I looked at a field site at Adelphia Farm. It was established in 2008. I sampled it from 2013 to 2015. I did a one-year greenhouse study where I just grew switchgrass in pots for one season, and I added things at the beginning of the season. I manipulated the soil conditions, and then I overwintered some pots from the one-year experiment and grew them for a full second year to see if there were any lag effects from the manipulations that we did. So starting with Adelphia Farm, you can see the grass growing through the season. It would typically be harvested in November, right after senescence, where the plant has reabsorbed the nutrients into the roots. This is a study set up by a different professor at Rutgers. She set up a biodiversity experiment, and I subsampled for just four varieties. One is pure switchgrass. One option is a mix of grasses, which is a different Panicum virgatum variety and big blue stem. And then two of them had nitrogen fixers also added to the plots, but I didn't focus on that for this talk. So over the, I sampled the total biomass yields of the farm in 2015 to see in the farm setting, in the field setting, do the biomass yields differ? And what we came up with was they're not completely statistically significant. The p-value was 0.06, so slightly higher than 0.05, which is the typical, what you typically want to see. But in this graph, you can see that the fertilized plots, which are on your right in the yellow, they did have the highest values of biomass production. So even though the means weren't statistically significant difference, you're still seeing the highest yields in the fertilized areas. And the plus sign is the switchgrass-only trial. That'll be in the next couple of slides. When you look at, we sampled the nitrogen for nitrates and ammonium, just to see how the fertilizer is changing over time, and I sampled it five times in 3 years, and we found that ammonium was significantly different between the fertilized and unfertilized plots 3 times, and the nitrates and nitrites were only significantly different once. But there are small differences in the soil. When we looked at mycorrhizal structures, we found some significant differences with when you just looked at one factor, but if you did a multivariate analysis of variance, it didn't always play out as significant. So you can see pretty much the blue at the bottom is the total hyphae counts per variety. So that's very similar. So you're seeing mycorrhizal colonization pretty much everywhere. You see some differences in the structures. For example, the spores were different in 2013. The arbuscules were significantly different in 2014 and 2015. And the vesicles, which are like a storage unit, were significant in 2015. Looking at the arthropods, we have a wide range of species or morpho species. So it didn't actually get down to the species level, but grouped them into large groups of things that look the same. So there were some groups that were different. There was a mesostigmatic mite species. If you grouped some of the large predatory mites together, that was significantly different in 2013, and one of the orobatid mites was significantly different. But when you look overall, on your left is the unfertilized plots, and on the right are the fertilized plots, and you see it's not consistently different between the unfertilized and the fertilized plots. So, and like I said with the other stuff, when you run a multivariate ANOVA, you don't see significant differences. 2014 is the same story. You have some groups that are significantly different, but overall, it's not different between the fertilized and unfertilized area when you do a multivariate ANOVA. I counted the nematodes. This is a little bit hectic in 2015 because there was a lot of them, and so I couldn't get to all of the treatments. So I just focused on the switchgrass-only trials, and you see no difference in total nematode count between the fertilized and unfertilized area. And the gray was just outside untilled land. But I wasn't able to look at groups of nematodes. So moving on to the greenhouse experiments, I directly manipulated the soil conditions, and if these soil conditions affect plant growth. You would expect to see it here if there's plant-soil interactions. And so what I added was mycorrhizal inoculum and fungal-feeding nematodes to the pots and fertilizer. So we might expect to see that, and it was sterilized soil. So these pots could act as sinks to the soil arthropods that can come in and colonize the pots. So you might expect to see different colonization happening in the fertilized and unfertilized, or the pots with fungal-feeding nematodes or mycorrhizal inoculum. So the one-year experiment, I had 10 replications at three levels of fertilizer. And like I mentioned, I added mycorrhizal inoculum or not, and I added mycophagous nematodes, or I didn't add it. So it was the combination of those three factors. In the next couple of slides, you'll see the purple cross is when there are the inoculum was added, and the little red loop was where nematodes were added. So you have nothing added, nematodes added, inoculum added, or both added as the treatment options. So when we looked at the biomass yields of these treatments, you find no difference in both root biomass yields and shoot biomass yields, which kind of is good if this is supposed to be a biofuel crop. The fertilizer is not affecting biomass yields, and neither are the treatments. There was definitely reduced diversity in soil arthropods compared to the field study. Primarily, there was these three groups. You have the Isotomidae calembula, or one orbatted mite, and this mesosymbiont mite with setae. But here, again, even though there are some differences between treatments, there's not a consistent response to the fertilization added, and also not a consistent response to the treatments that we added. Mycorrhizal colonization is very similar. And nematodes were not different either. In the two-year experiment, so we only added the treatments the first for the 1 year and then let it grow for 2 years. It's very similar. Biomass yields are no different. Soil arthropods, not different. You do see a little bit of difference in the mycorrhizal colonization and formations that happen. No difference in the nematodes. So in conclusion, in the field, we are seeing some small differences in soil arthropod morpho species, but not a clear consistent trend. In the greenhouse experiments, the fertilizer additions, mycorrhizal inoculum, and the nematode additions didn't actually change the soil ecology over the length of a season. So I guess it's not a surprise that the biomass yields weren't different. Our field and greenhouse studies show that switchgrass biomass yields are minimally impacted by fertilizer applications, and the soil community does not appear to be permanently altered by fertilizer application either. So this supports the fact that switchgrass is a good biofuel crop because it appears to be very resilient to what's happening in the soil, but sadly it means that I found nothing in my work. So thank you. A special thanks to Stacey Banos and the Banos Lab for the use of their field at Adelphia.